Hi, everybody. This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicle, Stories of the Supernatural. And today I have an author and a paranormal investigator from the UK. And his name is Decanus Vergaria. And again, he's a person that not only does he write the book, he actually does the work, okay, in a lot of very interesting and from the little that I've been able to read, kind of disturbing areas of the paranormal. And the reason why I bring this up, this is very important, because there's a lot of paranormal investigators out there that they want to get involved what I call in paranormal light, okay, which means, you know, your little hauntings or, you know, grandpa that, you know, whatever, wants his will to be found, something along those lines, but they will never, ever step out of that comfort zone, okay? And this gentleman is not like that. I believe, and I'm going to let him come on in just a second and start off with my usual question, but you're going to see that he does not just stay in the safe zone of the paranormal, which is, I think, is fantastic. So how are you doing today, Guinness? How's everything going for you over there at in the UK?
All is good. Great to be talking to you.
Great. Now I'm going to ask you what I ask all my guests, which is, because everybody's always interested, how did you first, or what was your first encounter in the paranormal? And the reason why I ask this is there's just some people that start in childhood and others have something happen in their adulthood. But please go ahead, and if you could tell my audience about that.
Oh gosh, it goes back really to almost shortly after I was born, I think. I've always been aware that there's more to life than just what people see in the three dimensions.
Okay.
So I'm a healer as well as doing my psychic work.
Okay.
So I was aware of perhaps seeing things that some other people couldn't see, but also intuitively healing for people. My mum's mum, I will be an example of that, she used to suffer from awful migraines.
Okay.
And one day I was toddling around, maybe 2 years old. I just instinctively put my hands on her head.
Wow.
Within a few minutes, she got relief and was able to return to doing a crossword. So there's always been this sense, really, almost as soon as I popped out, that there was more to life than just what most people could see.
And you know, you beat me to that question, because when you said, well, I'm a healer, I was going to say, well, how did you fall into that, or was that? And you just answered that question, which was, that's very interesting.
It's an intuitive, but it still is an intuitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been feeling people pretty much all the time, and I feel it. I feel if there's something wrong with somebody, but I'll only usually help them if they ask me, because I'm a believer in people's karma, and I don't want to interfere with their karmic path. If they have to go through a certain experience in order to grow as a person, I don't want to interfere with that. But what I will do if they ask me, is do a healing for them. It doesn't work every single time.
Sure.
But I can usually offer at least some sort of relief or help them to go through whatever experience they're going through at the time.
Okay. And because that sounds like, you know, that, you know, like when you did that first, what I would call the first healing experience, it was an organic component, you know, because somebody that was suffering from a headache.
Mm.
Did you ever go into when maybe you needed to heal somebody where they had some type of, it wasn't organic. It was, even though it might have an organic manifestation, but it was in a spiritual origin. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and did you gradually go into that, or how did that come about?
It's something I've probably honed over the years. I started out, it was purely an instinctive thing. If I felt that somebody was in pain as a small child, I would go and help them. It's the same with animals. You know, if you had a family cat, and if I felt that she was unwell, I would go and sort of help if I could do. So, you know, my healing with animals came in a more formal way many, many years later.
Okay.
This is something I document in the book, the first time I healed for a horse, of all things. But in those early days, it was more an intuitive thing. It just, as you say, grew organically. And now if I'm out and about, I do feel people. If I'm in a bidding war, I will feel if there's someone in there that has something which perhaps I could help, but I won't. You know, I wait for people to come to me these days.
Sure, that's understandable. So, like I said, I looked at your bio, and I see that you had an experience only when you were 2 years old. 2 years old. Could you tell us about that? Because that was when I read that, I was like, oh my God.
That was the other mental that I discovered.
Okay, yeah.
I'm still not quite sure what it was, because obviously I'm looking through very young eyes at exactly what it was that attacked me that particular day. I was sat in the back of the family car, really only a few seconds, just waiting for my parents to lock the door and come out, and off we go for wherever we were going that day.
Okay.
And this thing swooped down. I'd say it was a little like an eagle, but it certainly wasn't an eagle, and it was big. And it was the back window of the car. I flew out of the car in absolute terror and went running in the house. But
that's like,
I think the first time I came across something, some sort of elemental, something demonic.
Okay, and you mentioned, you made a very interesting observation, well, that you described it as an elemental. Do you consider elementals demonic, or do you see them as two separate types of entities?
No, of course not. But this thing, whatever it was definitely malevolent.
It was.
It didn't have my good intentions at heart at all. It was definitely out to do something, but for whatever reason, maybe even some early latent psychic self-protection was there. But for whatever reason, it wasn't actually able to get to me.
Okay, so even at that age, you instinctively knew that whatever that was, like you said, malevolent. That,
yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah.
Okay.
Again, this probably isn't that long after the incident of healing my mum's mum. I was very small.
Okay.
Way pre-school. And, terrified, I think, would be.
No kidding. I'd be like, and how did that affect you? Did you start fearing going outside? What happened to you after that event?
For a little while, for sure. I was looking around corners to see if this thing was out there waiting for me. But fortunately, I have very understanding parents who I think realized from an early age that I perhaps was a little different than your average small child. So they listened to me and they helped me.
Did you tell your parents? Were you able to tell them about that? I mean, I know at 2 years old, sometimes it's difficult to make yourself understood.
In the best way that I was able, I described it as a big bird, which was trying to get through the back window of the car to get at me. But I think at one level I knew that it maybe wasn't a big bird, and there were other people outside, other people in the gardens, in the street, and sure, if there had been this big bird attacking a small child, some of them would have come
to
help.
Of course. Now, when that incident happened, and maybe not at that moment, but now as you grew, you became an adult, looking back, do you think that was something that was because it was you, or was it because of the place you were at the location? Was it something tied to the location?
Yeah, without sounding too egotistical, yes, I think it was probably because it was me.
Okay. Oh.
Yes.
Okay, so at that point, so this was, I want to say, they kind of earmarked you very early on then, is what you're telling me, right?
Yeah. I think that if you put out these certain energies, healing energies, whatever you want to call it, psychic energies, you are going to attract some dark as well. And maybe one of the forces that perhaps later went on to work against. We're just sending out a little warning to me, maybe just trying to stop me before I...
You must have read my mind. That's exactly what I was thinking. They were like, we're gonna interfere and just see if we could just scare him away from that whole field altogether.
Yeah.
And people
think that's... Yeah, I think it probably was something like that.
And then, so what happened after that? Here you are, you're 2 years old. You've realized, you know, that you do have the healing touch, but at the same time, you're getting the negative part of... being a sensitive or psychic, whatever because you've witnessed something at a very young age that must have been very disturbing. So what happens after that?
My parents, bless them, did the best to make it seem as normal as possible. They didn't make it out to be this extraordinary thing that I'm this sort of special person or anything like that. They
okay.
did normalize it and encourage me to talk about anything else that I saw encountered and anything else that I felt, which was the best possible thing that they could do, really.
That was very good of them to do that, because unfortunately some parents don't know how to handle when they have a child that tells them certain things. They either punish a child or they tell them you're wrong, or you know, they go into denial themselves. So that was great that you were basically fostered in that acceptance, in other words, is the best word I can think of. And
I have a very open-minded mother.
Okay.
So I think also as a small girl saw certain things and experienced certain things, which maybe helped her to understand what I was going through. And she damaged the child.
Did you have I've heard of some kids as they're growing up and they're sensitive, that sometimes when they go either to school, which is usually their first introduction to, you know, being around a lot of strangers, you know, what happened to you when you went to school? Did you attune to them? Did you see things? What happened?
Well, there's another story, of course.
Okay. That's, let's go.
Yes. I went to a school which was in an old Victorian building. It was, 150 years old, this school. And I did encounter a ghost child at this school. Not in my first year. This was a little bit further down the line, because we moved from one part of the building to another part of the building when we got through a certain grade at school, a certain year at school.
Okay.
So I did encounter this this ghost child, which is again something that I document in my book. But I was really seeing things all the time and being aware that my friends at school weren't seeing the same things that I saw.
I was about to ask you that. How did that do to you when you, like, you want to make friends and you have your friends, but then you kind of like feel like I'm the only one seeing this or hearing this?
Yeah. There was a girl in my year at school who had arthritis, and I would feel the pain. You know, the poor girl was having a horrible time of it, and I would feel the pain, and I would help her a little bit, as much as I felt as I was able to.
Okay.
Give her a little bit of pain relief, but I knew by then, even at 5 years old, that this isn't something that you talk to people about. It isn't something that was sort of for general discussion. It was something that you kept to yourself, because you'd be singled out and people probably wouldn't believe it, and you know, one thing and another. So it's something that I did.
Okay.
And I did feel it, but it wasn't something that I necessarily broadcast.
No, and I mean, so in other words, you're saying that when you cited this was almost like what they call an intelligent spirit. It wasn't a residual thing that you were watching. You know how sometimes there's an imprint in a location, and some people see it, but there's nothing really there. No, maybe you might get a little bit of feeling of dread, but there's no communication. What you're describing, that wasn't the case then.
Not with this child, no. For sure. And at some point, the local psychic research group got involved, because this wasn't just some sort of shadow figure I was seeing as the core of my eye. I was actually in conversations with this ghost child. You know, we were friends. And it's something that my mother wanted to know. Was this an imaginary friend, perhaps? Or was this a real person? Was this somebody who had gone through some experience, died, and was somehow attached to the school and had, because I'm sensitive to these things, connected to me?
Right. So did she tell you what had happened to her, or what, you know, why she was maybe lost or confused or stayed there? Did she ever tell you that?
This was actually a boy, but
I'm sorry, boy.
Yeah, no, not really. It was like having an ordinary school friend, though I would only see him sometimes. I mean, at first, I wasn't even aware that he was a ghost child. It was
Oh,
more.
I see. Okay, so you and at some point, what happened when you realized what I'm the only one
Can actually see him.
that's seeing? Oh, okay,
Yeah, I
that's
talked to my friend
really.
about him, and he'd never see us talking. And I thought this was really strange. And I said this to my mum. Why can nobody else see him?
Okay.
Why am I the only one who can actually see him? He said,
And
"Excuse me a moment."
sorry.
Well, I guess something's going on over there for him. Here you go.
I'm back.
It's okay. It's okay.
Just been given a cup of coffee.
I understand totally what that's about. So, and once you realize this, even though, did you ever get scared, or was it like, okay, now I'm,
No,
no.
never scared. It wasn't that kind of a thing for me. He was just a boy from school. I think he was a little bit bigger than me. Maybe he was in the next year, but no, I was never scared. And the funny thing is, although I had some experiences by that point, seeing things, experiencing things, for some reason it never crossed my mind that this could be a ghost. I just thought he was a bit elusive, and other kids never actually saw him. And
So
this
this
is
for
where
you was this must have been. How did you do you think that caused? Because I've heard of a lot of kids that once they come to that realization that they're able to sense and see ghosts, for lack of a better word, they come sometimes it makes them a little bit isolated from their friends because they realize I'm the only one that's seeing this. So they, and like you said, sometimes you're afraid of sharing this information because let's face it, no child wants to be the odd man out, you know.
Yeah,
At
sure.
school, did that happen to you, or how did you handle this when you realized I'm the only one that's seen this child?
Yeah,
And
it was a little strange. It was, I had one or two close friends who I think just imagined I must have an imaginary friend. I was talking to somebody they couldn't see, and I think they just thought I had an imaginary friend. So I talked to my mum about it.
okay,
She
so
knew
to.
about my friend.
And what happened? Did you see, was this something like an everyday occurrence, or would you just see him on and off and then?
On and off. Yeah, it wasn't every day by any means. It would be maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks I'd encounter him somewhere,
Okay.
usually in the area where we hung our coat, which was a quiet part of the school. So I see him there, and we'd maybe have a walk down a corridor and have a talk, and then I'd go to my class and he'd be gone. In the early days of this, I just assumed he'd gone to his class. It never really occurred to me that it was anything other than that.
And so later on, did you stay in this school? Did you ever see anything else at the school per se? Or.
I actually changed schools,
Oh, okay.
so in the end, I was seeing him less and less.
Okay.
For whatever reason, he no longer really appeared to me very often. The last time I saw him was in the school gym. But
Okay.
he wasn't, in a sense, a talk. He was more observing what was going on, what we were doing in the gym. I think he was laughing at us, actually, as
You
we were
know.
being put in paces, rather badly. But that was the last time that I saw him, and then shortly after that, I changed schools.
Okay, so when you go off to school, and the reason I'm saying using school is that this is, you know, did you ever have any other encounters like that where you went to the school and by now you're realizing, okay, I mean, I'm able to see or sense things that maybe the other kids aren't. Did that ever happen to you again where you went to school or if you were with, you know, playing outside with maybe with other children, where, because, and the reason why I'm asking this is because I've realized that when people are growing up like with that psychic ability, you know, you kind of attract people that are discarnates because they realize that you can sense them or hear them or see them. So you might not necessarily have to go to a haunted house. They, you could be practically anywhere
Yeah,
and you.
that's the thing, actually, just talking about going to a haunted house. I've never actively gone out looking for ghosts.
Okay, there you go.
I get called in, and I'll do things with people, I'll do healings with people, I'll deal with things that maybe it's time for them to move on, and I've done that many times. But going to your traditional haunted house never really held much appeal. It's more about misplaced entities, misplaced spirits.
Okay.
And that's really what I deal with. Going, I mean, I'm here in England, it's full of haunted houses. You know,
yeah, you're tripping up. And I'm sure because, you know, like you said, England has so many historical sites, but I'm sure you realize that it doesn't necessarily have to be old or historical.
Absolutely not.
For something paranormal or supernatural to be occurring there. You know, it's very attractive, it's very romantic, but,
yeah,
you know, that doesn't always have to be the case.
Yeah, the old English castle, the haunted English castle. No, it's more modern buildings actually that I'm involved with these days, where maybe they're built on the site of something far older.
Right.
Whatever entities or spirits were there are still attached to the location. So, mm-hmm. yeah, in a sense, it is far more modern buildings, maybe built in the last 40 or 50 years, which are what I deal with these days.
And when was your next encounter with something negative? Because obviously, the thing with this child did not seem to be negative.
Not negative at all. He was, there was a postscript to that, because we did the psychic research, and they did find out, I knew the boy's name, that he did exist.
Great.
I didn't learn this until quite a lot of years later. My mum thought it probably wasn't wise to tell me at 7 years. Or whatever I was at the time. So this is something I learned about when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, he did exist, and he actually lived in the same road that we lived in.
Oh, that is excellent. Tell me that story. Because that's great that you were able to actually research and get that.
Yeah, this is in the days before the internet, so it went crawling through newspapers and archives and libraries and everything. But there was a great guy called Frazier, who was the main person in the local psychic research in that area. And he and his team. And about 15 years before I went to that school, he was going to school on his bike, which meant passing by an extremely busy main road. And unfortunately, he pedaled just a little bit too fast and couldn't stop, and went into the traffic and was killed.
Oh, my God.
You know, we did actually find the archive of this particular awful event. So, you know, we were able to confirm the fact that this boy did actually exist.
Did they have a picture of him? Were you able to see some type of picture?
I didn't see a picture of him, but his parents did actually still live in the same road as us.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we had moved by then, but we knew the couple concerned. You know, the weird thing being I was seeing their son at school all those years later.
Oh, my God. So that is so interesting, because sometimes people have sightings and they never really know the identity or really what happened or how this came about, and they just leave it at because... So luckily there was some type of documentation that you were able to follow up on.
I think because it was such an unusual thing to happen, you know, that some little boy should get knocked down off his bike, it made all the newspapers, front page news, and those archives were still there. So, yeah, we were able to confirm his identity, and many years later, maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, I went back there. Which is the first time I've been back, because I felt that I could help it.
Okay.
I could move on, and it seemed only right that I should do that. So I went part of the old road that I used to live in, and walked back to the school. It was in closed terms, so there were no children there. And reached out to the building, and he wasn't there. He'd gone. So I think that maybe someone from the psychic research went and helped him go on his way.
Yes, sometimes that is the sometimes what's necessary, almost like that acknowledgement of this is what, who he was and what happened to him.
Yeah.
So now,
I mean, I'm
sorry, go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to invite him home, come and have tea with us, but my mum didn't think that was a very good idea.
Well, you have to think of it, where you were at, you you didn't feel anything was really negative, and, you know, you wanted to help him, and you must have been thinking at some point all he does is he's here in school all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Wearing this archaic coat, okay, he had the same school uniform as I had, but this really old-fashioned coat, which absolutely fascinated me. You know, I hadn't seen anybody else wearing a coat like that, but it would be, because it was from a different generation than me.
That's great. I think that's fantastic that you were able to get, like you said, validation, like, this is who he was, this is what happened to him. You know, and then, like you said, that later on you found out, okay, he's not there, which means he was able to go on and be where he was supposed to be. So now I was going to say, I know from the fact that, like you said, from the moment that you were earmarked so young by malevolent forces, it's almost like a spoiler that you were bound to cross paths again with not so nice entity.
Yes. It's happened many times.
Okay.
But the place that we lived, in Manchester, England.
Okay.
Which is where I had my ghost friend at school. The road that we lived in was built on a far older site, which used to be one of these old English mansions.
Okay.
And what they did when they were putting together our road is they used a little bit of this old house in every single one of the new houses they were building.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be a staircase, there'd be a door.
Okay.
Every house had something that came from this old house, a fireplace or something.
Okay, I see what you mean.
This old house must have been very haunted and not necessarily by very nice entities. Extremely negative entities. And so at home at that time, it was more or less a daily occurrence between us and our immediate neighbours to the left, and the neighbours after them to the left.
Okay.
There would be, if you like, the traditional trappings of haunted. There'd be bangs, there would be crashes, there would be voices, there would be and yes, I did see many things in that house. In fact, that is one of the reasons why we moved in the end to a different place, because it became impossible to have any peace there.
So it was like you said, it wasn't in particular your location, it was that area in and of itself, where everybody in that area was experiencing some version.
We were not the only ones to experience things by any means. Even our skeptical neighbours had to concede in the end that they were witnessing something supernatural for sure.
And so your family said, okay, enough of this, we're out of here, we're leaving, we're going someplace else.
Yeah.
And
we would have there was a gentleman who would appear on the stairs in our house, dressed in Victorian clothes, I would say. He had a mustache, dark hair.
Okay.
A hat, a long coat. I don't think he was aware of us. In fact, I'm pretty
okay.
Sure
he was like, okay, he was like doing his own thing, in other words.
Doing his own thing, yeah, probably like he always had. So he'd walk up the stairs and then sort of disappear halfway up. And I wasn't the only person to see him. Other people in other houses also saw him. We had a dog, Golden Retriever ghost, that, again, we would see quite regularly. We had cellars in the house, and the dog would usually be down in the cellars. But one particular thing that happened is, in the heart of winter, we had a particularly bad snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Then it stopped snowing, and we went outside to sort of clear the path, like you do. And we found dog prints going across the back garden.
Really?
So far, and then they just stopped. No sort of returning any direction. They just went halfway across the lawn and then just stopped. So many, many proofs that supernatural things were happening there.
So you must have, and I know you mentioned that it wasn't only you that was, you know, witnessing things, but because you're a little bit, I think, more sensitive maybe than some other people, what was the feeling? Did you ever, was it a residual thing, like you said, because this place was where this other location had once occupied this other structure, or did you feel like there was anything malevolent or, you know, unrested about it? What do you think? Or it was just that it was like a two overlapping thing? This structure was there once before, now they had built something there, and...
Yeah, it was definitely an overlapping thing. There were some builders working on the house next door, but one of us to the left.
Okay.
And the people had gone away while they did this work. The mumman was on the front, and they came running out of the house, these builders, saying, do you see ghosts here very often? And they've seen an old lady appear before them, and she looked extremely unhappy. And they thought it was probably because they were messing with her house.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they were dealing with part of the house that belonged to this older house.
Mm-hmm.
This house that predated these houses, and maybe they were messing with it. And she was quite displeased about it. But she manifested before them in all her glory, and they were certainly able to get that she was far from pleased with them.
Okay, so, and you know, I've heard of that sometimes certain entities, for lack of a better word, they're dormant, but then when renovations and buildings and things like that start going on, they kind of like make their presence known, like, I'm not happy that this is going on at all. And so here you are, you're living there, but you said you moved away, and it sounds like almost like your experiences so far have been like what I call incidental. You know, because where you went to school, where you lived, at this time, did you still have any inkling that you were going to go into this field as an adult? When was it that you, how can I say, what's the word I'm looking for, that you felt yourself drawn into just...
Yeah, it was definitely a calling, and I think I felt that really from my teenage years, that it was almost an inevitability that...
Okay.
Didn't ignore this. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't something like a brush under the carpet, so I may as well do something about it. At that particular house, and this is what really drove us away, there was a demonic entity.
In which house? In that house?
Yeah. Again, I wasn't the only person to witness this.
Oh, wow.
It was, you caught a sight of it just out of the corner of your eye, and it was about the size of a small monkey, black and shiny.
Oh.
It looked like a kind of, like the carapace of a beetle. It was a nasty thing, and we did actually capture it in a photograph. There is a photograph of this of it. I'm stood in the street, and this thing stood by the gate, near me. So we have actually got it on a pitch.
Wow. So this was totally separate from what was going on. Oh, what do you think? Was that something that predated even that structure? How do you think that came about?
This was ancient. Maybe it brought about some negativity in the original building. That's
okay.
Couldn't rest, I don't know. But for sure, it was nasty. It was very unpleasant. It never caused us any actual harm, but we knew that there was the potential there. And certainly, like I said, we weren't the only people to see this thing. You know, the house.
That's very, like, that must have been very, I can imagine that the people that saw it were thinking, okay, I'm losing my mind. I'm seeing something what is that? Because one thing is when you see a ghost of a person, and you're like, okay, it's a person, and you might get scared. But when you start seeing something like what you just described, I can imagine the people that saw that must have been like, like, let me rub my eyes, because how can I?
Yeah, for sure. It also came with a sulfurous, nasty smell with it as well.
Really?
When it was around, you couldn't see it.
Yes, I've heard that. That's one of the hallmarks.
Nothing flesh. It was nasty. Really one of the main reasons why we decided to leave that place and go somewhere else.
Right. No, this sounds like something that this is not, oh, I hope, you know, you go on to the other side. Like, what do you do with something like this? Wow.
At that point, in my development, I couldn't do anything with it. It was just one of those things, and, you know, far beyond my capabilities at that point.
Let me ask you, when you have encountered things like this, is it something that was part, like, you know, you said originally from before, tied to that place, and maybe even the people that lived there way before had experiences, they just didn't know what exactly what was influencing them? Or do you think that was part of the land, or was it something that was conjured by someone at some point?
I feel like it was probably conjured by someone at some point during the long, 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 long past. Maybe they didn't quite know what they were doing, what they were getting for their efforts, but yeah, it's definitely something that was brought onto the physical plane by somebody, I would feel, yeah.
Makes you wonder what was, why they did that. I know there's, I'm thinking out of it from like, what are you doing? But I know there's people out there that they think of things, they look at things differently as to why they would conjure something like that. Or people that conjure things and then it gets away from them. Like they think.
Yeah, that's a neat game. And got the sense it was feeding off negativity. It enjoys scaring people. And it was probably doing that for a very, very long time. So whether it's still there or not, I don't know. But
it's like, yeah, okay. Good luck to whoever's there. Your family is, how old are you at this time when you were living there at that location?
We leave less than an hour's, just coming up to 9. So I did my last couple of years of junior school somewhere else. So yeah, I would have been just before my 9th birthday.
Okay.
So a lot of experience at a very early age.
And so your family wisely decides to move away, I might add.
Yeah.
And so what happens next? What happens? How does, because now, and the reason why I ask is that, you know, sometimes when people like yourselves, they go into adolescence, also things, you know, change a little bit. They, you know, kinetic energy and so forth, just because of that age. Is that what happened with you?
I see it as gaining control over what I was able to do. My age years from my learning curve.
Okay.
And it's also when I consciously started to use psychic self-protection, which I've built up a lot over the ensuing decades. Very difficult to get these days, very difficult to get through to me, because it's been built up and built up and built up and strengthened over a lot of years. But yeah, it's when I stopped being, if you like, a passive observer at teenage years and started becoming a little bit more proactive, seeing what I could do. And it was coming of age, really.
Okay. When you were growing up, or, you know, it's like you said, as you know, you develop your sensitivity, your ability to, you know, filter what it is that you're receiving. And you mentioned that you know, you didn't seek it. Basically, at what point did you ever have somebody come to you and say, I need your help because I think I'm experiencing something supernatural and I don't understand it. I think you can help me with it.
Yeah, it started to happen. It started with members of my own family. I've got a large extended family, and obviously they were aware of the story of the things that had happened. First of all, we'll start with members of my own family. Well, I mean, what I would add here is I've never advertised my services.
Okay.
I'm on social media, but I don't use it to promote myself at all. You know,
right.
I'm terrible at social media. So everything I've ever done is people coming to me to ask me for help through word of mouth, friends of friends.
Right, exactly. Somebody that knows somebody.
Yeah.
And
you won't find me in any magazines or anything like that. I don't do that. Yes, I'm generally quite busy.
Right, and you know what? You mentioned something very important, that despite what many people think, there's a lot of people that really want to, if they're having this type of experience, whether it's a friend or a family, some of them want their privacy kept, so they're very careful about who they reach out to.
Yeah.
Because
I'm extremely discreet. I've written this book, Ghost, Demons, and Psychic Healing, but all the names have been changed to protect anybody held. In some cases, street names have been changed, locations to protect people because they don't want that kind of publicity. And why should they?
Yeah,
you
yes.
know, if they've been held, if they've been healed or cleared some sort of entity for them, they might not necessarily want the big wide world to know about that.
Right.
So first of all, I went and helped members of my own family, my extended family. And it kind of grew out of that, really. You know, everything else grew out of that. Teenage years, yes, I was still seeing things. I was still experiencing things. But by then, I was fully aware that it was probably only myself and one of the gifted people who were seeing them.
So in other words, you did not grow this.
No. You know, even walking through a mall, I know that perhaps someone I saw wasn't necessarily there in the sense of what most of the people consider that they are.
So, and you okay? So here you are, you know. Obviously, like we said, you know, this is not left you. This is, as a matter of fact, you probably refined the technique, for lack of a better word, and you're helping friends and family very discreetly, which I might add, people sometimes underrate how important that is. And I saw something in your bio where you also do this remotely. So it sounds almost like at some point you started working with people outside. You know, it didn't have to be a face-to-face contact or...
No, I found that, really remote healing was better for me. It was better for me because I'm not influenced by any vibrations I'm picking up from the person sat in front of me. So I'm able to work in a very detached way without seeing someone in distress literally sat in front of me. So I do, to be honest, far more enjoy remote healing than hands-on healing for someone who I'm treating directly. And that's more the area of my healing work these days. And my reputation has spread in that sense. And that's what I'm doing a lot of these days. You know, there are a lot of people that I've come across who... Oh, I shouldn't laugh. There are a lot of people who I've come across who feel that they're possessed by something.
Yes.
Yes, I've come across that once or twice. Well, more than once or twice. But often it's negativity of their own making. The cause themselves block. I'm a believer in chakras. They block chakras through... certain repeated patterns of behavior, and I'm able to help with that. I'm able to clear that. I call it karma cleaning. So I'm able to help them with that. And they always generally report back that things have changed and things have got better.
Oh, sure. And you know what? You point out something very important when you said that sometimes, you know, despite when they say, well, I'm possessed, and you know, maybe after contact with them or sensing their situation, you realize it's their own making. But I have found myself in my own experience that sometimes it's, you kind of evade responsibility when you put it on a spirit or a demon, you know what I'm, versus I kind of put myself in this, whether it's my pattern of thinking or my belief system that I've don't want to fight myself out of. So
yeah.
what do you do? You tell them, I imagine, what, guess what? You don't have a supernatural agent here that's trying to destroy your life. You're doing a great job all by yourself. How do you break that to them?
I generally, unless I feel that they're ready to hear that, I generally just tell them that I've done a healing session, or in some cases a few healing sessions for, and the thing that was bothering you is now gone.
Okay.
If I feel that they're ready to hear that, hey, it's your own thought patterns here which are creating this, it's your own actions which are creating this, then I will do it. Quite often those people are in quite fragile states anyway, so the last thing they really need is, if you like, the blame game, taking responsibility for the fact that I'm able to help them. Maybe will enable them to leave it behind. I mean, it's up to them.
Of course.
They could repeat the same pattern and end up back at square one again.
Right.
At least I've cleared it for now. And it's up to them what they do from there.
And you make a very good point. Ultimately, it's that person's choice. After, if you've done it, if you've intervened and you've tried to help them, what happens with them afterwards, it's ultimately their choice how they want to handle, or if they want to slide back into whatever.
Yeah, the choice is theirs. And there have been a few cases where people have come back to me and say, oh, it's just as bad as it was before.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I talk to them and suggest that they have to make some lifestyle changes. I can do another healing for them, but if it's just going to end up back as it was, you know, most in their time and most in my time. So, you know, the best thing is work on your own lifestyle, make those changes, and, you know, heal yourself, really.
So, what has happened when you have run across something, let's say somebody has contacted you, whether it's, you know, person to person or remotely, that you sense, okay, no, there is some type of supernatural spirit, whatever it might be, that is tormenting this person and driving them maybe crazy because they can't understand what's happening to them.
Yeah.
What's happened? I guess my question is, have you ever run across the difference between somebody that might have a spirit attachment of a human discarnate versus something that's non-human? Do you run across the difference between one and the other?
Yeah, sometimes someone will have. Yeah, you can tell the difference as well. It's something you feel on an intuitive level. And I've encountered both. I've encountered both of us.
Okay.
In the case of something which isn't human, I am able to deal with it. Basically, I have a method which does deal with them and does get rid of them, and they won't come back. In the case of, if you're like a relative who's attached to them, or some other entity who's decided that it's quite a good idea to take over their life, and this does happen.
Okay.
Again, that's something which takes a little more work, but it is something that I have dealt with and I can deal with as well. There have been very few cases where I've been unable to help somebody. And I would concede that in those cases it's because they don't want to be helped, it's a comfort zone. Whatever unpleasantness is happening around them has become so familiar to them that they don't want to shake it off, which is awful, but I can't do anything.
And have you had any negative repercussions because you are the person that's going to interfere, maybe derail a possession or whatever this entity wants?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I've had everything in the book thrown at me at one time or another. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It's like a bit of attack in the middle of the night, the whole thing, yeah, definitely. Entities which aren't human following me around. But like I said, I've got a lot of strong psychic self-protection and I am able to deal with them. I am able to get rid of them.
And what do they try to do? Do they try to scare you? Is it, you know, bad dreams? How is it when you realize, okay?
No, it's harming. They want to harm me. Psychically attack me and harm me. But you can't. You know, you can't. but it's not for lack of trying. Yeah.
And have you ever, I'm going to ask you, because have you ever seen something like what you described at that house that was absolutely demonic or malevolent, and that you knew it because it was just so unusual, for lack of a better word? Have you ever seen anything, not exactly like that, but that you actually visually saw something?
Yes, on more than one occasion, yes, as an adult. There are certain entities I'm fully aware I can't do anything about. If I ever encounter one of those, I do have to, like I say, to the people that my advice is move, because there's nothing I can do here. It's beyond my capabilities. This is an ancient entity.
Okay.
And extremely strong, and there's nothing I can do. Just move, go somewhere else, go someplace else.
Let me ask you, have you ever run across scenarios exactly like what you described, that you say, okay, this is ancient, this is I'm out of my depth on this one, and I have no problem admitting it. So, have you ever found that sometimes that's tied into either the family, or that, you know, how they have like a generational curse, that the curse sometimes is that type of attachment of a non-human entity, which has been bound to that bloodline, and maybe it was a pact that was made hundreds of years before?
It happens. For sure. And if you look at the family history, you can see tragedy, you can see unhappiness.
Yes.
And it's that strong connected. There's that stronger connection. There's that so interwoven within the fabric of the family. I just have to go see it. I can't do anything on this occasion. There'll be people out there who can, but those particular things are just not within my sphere of expertise. I can't take them on. There are entities known as boggarts, which are sort of swamp-dwelling entities here in England, and I've had two encounters with them. And it's rather like dealing with an arrogant teenager. They're very ancient.
Okay.
They're connected to the water. On both of those occasions, I've had to say, I can communicate and maybe try to reason, not that you can.
Okay.
But there's absolutely nothing I can do here. it's not simple.
Now that you mention it, that's a very accurate description, what you're saying, when you're saying it's an accurate, it's an ancient spirit, entity, however you want to describe it. Do you find that in those cases, the traditional religious approach, I'm going to use the word exorcism, but I'm not really thrilled with that because its connotation is too dramatic. But do you find that in some cases that might not even work if it predates that, or what would happen?
That's my experience in those cases. I usually follow from the priest or whoever else they've called in. They've usually gone through all that to no avail, unfortunately. So then they're looking for other alternatives. It's quite often the case, you mentioned attachments to certain families. This will be traditionally quite religious. They've got the Bible in the house, they've got the cross on the wall, yet still these things are happening.
Exactly.
It's been a great test of faith, I suppose, but the priest, bless them, are not really able to help on these occasions.
Right, it's because of the nature of what's there, not...
Yeah, sure. And it's understanding what it is. It's understanding that it's got this great connection that goes through the timeline to this particular family. And, holy water isn't going to work here. It just isn't that kind of a thing.
Yes. And I have heard of... not only family curses, but pacts, even vows taken... that have kept on through generations, and whether the original person did it just for themselves and unwittingly didn't know that they were going to affect the rest of their lineage, or sometimes they even make vows knowing full well that this is going to basically attach to their bloodline. Down the road, you get, like you said, when you look at the history of the family, what's gone on, it's like, okay, nobody leads a perfect life, but sometimes there's a trail of tragedies, unhappiness, very, you know, I don't want to say bad things, but more than the norm for any family. When you take a look backwards at what's occurred.
Yeah, there'll be a pattern. You'll see a pattern occurring. Mm-hmm. And if you see this pattern, you know, the likelihood is it's going to be some, as you say, deal done an awful long time ago, generations past. And yeah, I have helped on one or two occasions, but more often than not, it's so deeply rooted that trying to do anything about it, short of time travel.
Right, yeah. Which, yeah, last time I checked, really, that's not possible. So what? Let's say it's not. That's not the case. Somebody's lucky enough that when they contact you, you realize, okay, this is something that I can handle. That's within my scope, my abilities. Is it? Yeah. Do you contact or negotiate with this entity or whatever is there directly? Do you use or is it just a certain method that you use? How does that work?
It varies. It depends. But I tune into whoever it is, whether it's a ghost or whatever kind of entity
okay.
it is, spirit. I'll tune in and yes, we'll communicate. And sometimes all they need is to realize that it's time to move on.
Okay.
The stuff at a particular location. And it's time to now leave that behind and let the other people live.
So they're kind of eager in a way. They're almost willing. They're ready to go.
Like, yeah, for sure. In 99.9% of the times, it has a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, sometimes little friendly persuasion or not friendly persuasion.
Okay.
We move the spirit on. And this is one of the reasons why I don't really go to haunted sites, your traditional haunted sites, because I don't think the owners would be too pleased if I started moving all the spirits on in their haunted house. So,
well, and you know, I bring this up because people don't realize that there's enough drama to go around now in modern times that you don't need to go to traditional or established haunted locations to feel or encounter a paranormal either entity or an event. Or you go to some, I imagine, some most regular looking places that you could think of, and you could witness something that will, like, you'll be like, huh? And it's like, you know, and the reason why I say this is that everybody hypes the, and I imagine especially in England, like you said, because you have the castles and all these older homes and you know, places that are known for being haunted, and you really don't need that. I mean, like I said, historically it's great, it's interesting, but you could go just about any place and find yourselves right smack in the middle of a very, very active haunting. Intelligent is what I mean also.
Yeah, I walk down the street and I'll be aware that certain buildings I'm passing are haunted. And I just leave them be. You know, if nobody's bothered, why should I be? It's,
well, you know, yeah, at this point it's like... I'm sure, I don't know, you've seen that movie. It came out back in the 90s, The Sixth Sense, which is with a little boy, I see dead people. And you remember at the very end of the movie, there's a person who got killed because they were riding their bicycle, and they died, and you could see that he is seeing this person who just passed away, maybe a few minutes ago. Have you ever run across that where you are, like you said, minding your own business, going somewhere, and you see somebody like that who really doesn't realize that they're dead?
Yes.
Okay.
Often, I mean, no, with a lot of regularity. Yeah, a lot. You know, even just driving down the road, I'll see someone walking on the pavement, and I'll know for sure that nobody else can see this person.
Okay.
And they're just going about the business as they always did, and they don't know.
Right. They're living. They're just they miss the part where you go into the light thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're just carrying on. Have they ever tried to come up to you? Because maybe they didn't make that transition. They have their awareness, but they obviously they don't have a human body anymore. But they're still trying to communicate with living people around them and not figuring out why nobody sees me and nobody hears me. Have you ever had any of them come up to you, hope like thinking, oh my God, he can see me, you know, he can.
Yes.
Have you found yourself in that scenario that you need to tell them, you're dead?
Yes, that has happened. Yeah, and it can often be in the most mundane, silly places. Yeah, for sure, that's happened. And the look of, oh, on the other person's, oh, that's
okay. A lot of people think that that doesn't happen, and you know what? People sometimes they lose their lives in a variety of circumstances where they really miss that transition, whether it's because it was sudden, violent, they were medicated, they were anesthetized, or it was just so sudden that they still haven't gotten to that point where they realize or accept it that they're deceased.
Yeah, I know. Yes, for sure. And, you know, again, I shouldn't laugh, but some of those scenarios that do occur are quite amusing because you get that look of, oh, right, okay. that explains a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, oh, no wonder nobody's paying attention to me. That's why. And have you, since you've had contact, obviously, with malevolent or demonic forces, have you ever had contact or seen angels?
Yes. Yeah. This is just a one occurrence.
Okay.
About 20 years ago, in the garden of a friend, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was at her house, and it was twilight, just the sort of end of the evening, and yeah, I did see angelic entities in her garden. She could see them as well. Although she wasn't particularly renowned for being psychic, but she could see them as well.
Okay.
And, there were several of them. And then they were gone. But yeah, it's not something I'm encountering all the time. But yeah, I have seen.
Was there a particular reason why they were there in that spot?
Never really found out.
They were just there. How did it make you feel? Besides the fact that you were able to see them, was there a different feeling about it? Or?
Yeah, it was beautiful. Absolute peace and tranquility.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been. Since now that we're getting. It was, in other words, it wasn't only that you saw it or you felt it, it was the feeling they came across was something that you realized this is very positive, or this is...
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Wow. Okay. And...
That's the only time. So far.
Have you ever come... And I know have you ever come across... I'm not going to use the word elementals, but beings that... And I want to call... I usually call them elementals, but they're not evil and they're not good. They're kind of like doing their own thing... But they're usually, like you stated, they're very ancient. They've been around for a very, very long time. Nature spirits, there you go. Have you come across that?
Very tuned into nature spirits.
Okay.
I love walking in the woods, and sometimes they'll trip me up or twang a branch into me while I'm walking past. But I encounter nature spirits a lot. I take thousands of photographs when I'm out and about. I like photographing ancient buildings, we have a lot here, and I like photographing nature. Just three times out of all these photographs, I've managed to catch nature spirits in photographs.
Oh!
Three times out of thousands of photographs.
Wow!
and one of them is waving to me. One of them is actually
You're
waving
kidding.
To me.
They're kidding. That is, but it sounds like you feel them, even if though you haven't been able to.
They're usually harmless. They're mm-hmm. just going out of the business like they have for millennia, and I like them. I like the fact that they're there, and I like the fact that they know that I know that they're there. So, yeah, nature spirits and I have a good connection.
So, you, I know you've written this one book. Are you planning any other books? You know, I know you said I take pains to disguise the names or the identity of the people I've worked with. Are you planning to put out any more books?
There is a book in the pipeline. It's just in the planning stage at the moment, which is focusing on that time when I lived in the area of Manchester, my childhood.
Okay.
Because there are so many stories that need to be told about that. And I feel that people will find it fascinating. And now I've been researching it. I've been talking to people.
Okay.
That's why I went back there, really, to investigate again, to see what I could feel. And it's an absolute hotspot. I'd like to know if other people know this, and that's the next thing I'm going to find out. I'll contact the psychic research group who investigated the original case all those years ago.
So you're doing the legwork, you're doing the hard
doing
work.
The research at the moment.
Yes, so, yes.
I want to get my facts straight before I start putting sort of finger to keypad and start writing the book. And as much as possible, have all the things which I'll talk about have some sort of historic background, so I'm able to clarify, or I dislike the word prove, but clarify that the things which I'm talking about do have some foundation in history, in actual
okay.
fact,
mm-hmm.
the event occurred, and people who existed. So I'm looking at the old house, the one that we little bits of it we use in all the new houses.
Okay.
Researching some of the history of that as well, so I'm hoping I can maybe find some photographs and some photographs of the people, which would be absolutely awesome, because with permission I can use them in the book and
yes.
we'll illustrate exactly what I'm talking about.
And you know, I think that is so interesting, because what happens, especially when you write a book, you know, for the reader, it provides that validation. And I know it takes a lot more work than just using the internet, but when you go out there and you do the legwork, yeah. and whether it's to go to a library or to an archive center, or even if you're lucky enough to find somebody that you can actually interview
yeah.
as an eyewitness that sometimes provides their own material,
yeah.
That gives a completion to that story that you're presenting about whatever that location is.
Mm.
That
yeah, the guy who did the original investigation, Frazier,
mm-hmm.
and would probably be somebody who remembers this investigation, and people are willing to talk. You know, you find that if you ask the questions, people, we want to talk about it. And I'll also talk to some of the people perhaps who still live in the area, who were our neighbours back then, and see what happened after we left, because I'm sure things did.
Oh, of course.
You know,
of course.
I'm sure there's more stories to be told. So it's very much in the planning stage, but perhaps sometime next year, the next in this series will see the light of day.
Well, no. Writing is, everybody, it's not the actual, besides the research part of it, that actual dedication of putting stuff together, especially on a daily basis, so you get a completed product.
Yeah.
That's harder than most people think.
Yeah, for sure it is.
I mean,
also putting it into words that people want to read. You know, it's very
exactly.
easy to just write down the facts, but it has to also be a good read. It has to capture your audience, and it has to keep them. You know, I hope I've managed to do that with this book, but that's what I'm aiming to do with the next one, and that's why I want all the research in place first, so that anybody who was involved in those times, who happens to come across it, can look at it and say, yeah, for sure, that's exactly what happened. I remember.
And what advice would you, I don't know if you work with any gems or any minerals, or what advice do you give people You do, right? What advice do you give people who, not because I'm, because sometimes things cross your path, not because you're looking for it, because they cross your path.
Yeah.
Whether it's malevolent or just negative, is there any gems or minerals or advice that you give to people, like, this is what you should do on a daily or on a weekly basis just to keep things clear around you and your surroundings? So
I always say, if you want to keep your space clear, natural citrine, not the stuff that you mainly get in stores these days, which is heat treated amethyst, which you can tell isn't real citrine because it's quite dark,
right?
You know, like toffee coloured, like caramel. Natural citrine is a little bit paler than that and does have a completely different feel to it.
Okay.
So if you can get small boulders, tumbled stones, better than that, crystals of it, place those around your environment, place them by the door, the windows. It does help clear the space. And obviously amethyst, a great healing stone.
Yes.
I worked with crystals for years. I did actually run a crystal business for a while, so I have a storehouse of many, many crystals. The one crystal that I don't tend to work with is quartz.
Okay.
Because it's a magnifier. If I wear quartz or carry quartz, I'm picking up everything for sort of miles around. It doesn't give me any peace at all, and I can't sleep. So I generally don't work with quartz.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's like a receiver, so I'm picking up everything.
And do you recommend that people use sage or anything like that as far as any herbs?
Smudging is a wonderful thing. For sure. I do smudge. Yeah.
Okay. And I imagine because the reason why I brought this up is that sometimes people pull out the sage and the gem, you know, all the minerals when things go south, when everything starts turning darker, and it's like, don't wait for that. You should do this on a regular basis, at least once a week, not only for yourself, but don't wait for for things to start getting unusual than you think. Is then everybody's like, oh, where's my sage, or where's my this, and what? And it's like, no, you should have those handy all the time. And the reason why I say this also is people don't realize that sometimes when you go about your daily life, especially if you go into places, whether for work or play, where there's a lot of people, you could just get negative energies that kind of like jump ship on you. It doesn't have to be a ghost or an entity or anything like that. You just don't know. You don't know what's going on in that person's life. You don't know what type of person they are or what, you know, what they're carrying around with them. And if you go into some place where you're very close and some of that stuff you kind of like sometimes can, you know, basically go with you. And,
yeah, it attaches to you. Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, that's why I asked you about it, because I think it's a good idea. People don't realize that, you know, just because somebody looks very well put together or smiling, that you don't know what that person is going on in their life or what type of person they are. And I've seen some very dark or negative things walk with a person. And if you come into contact, even if you really don't have any connection, I've seen people say, for some reason, you know, from one day to the next, I started feeling like sad or worried or anxious, and I don't know where this is coming from. And I asked them, well, what have we been doing? I went to a certain place and it was really crowded, or a concert, or even shopping. And I said, did you have like a lot of, you know, really tight spaces? Yeah. I said, that's a chance that you picked up a little bit of negativity from somebody around you. You need to do this. And they'll tell me, oh yeah, that was great. That was, you know, like all of a sudden, because they feel that shift. Nobody leads a perfect life. But a lot of people realize when things shift for them a little bit, whether it's the way they feel or the atmosphere in their home and the space that they live in, which is like, okay, there's something, you know, on some level, even if they don't understand it. And like I say, you need to head that off at the pass. Like, don't bring it home with you.
Yeah, you pick up in your aura little bits of all the people who you come into contact with. And yeah, for sure they attached you. And I'll just show you my crystal.
Oh, okay.
I have space, which is a lump of rose quartz.
Uh-huh, okay. Wow, that is beautiful. That's nice.
I've had this for years and years and years.
I see you keep it close by.
It always comes and sits somewhere near me. So that's by me, in my little creative space.
Yes.
I love rose quartz. The love stone.
What advice do you give people about recharging their gems or their minerals? Do you tell, should they recharge it in the sunlight, by moonlight? Do you have any advice on that?
Water is always good.
Water? Okay.
If you can't go and put it in your local river, if it isn't one handy, then run it under the tap or you use mineral water.
Okay.
But yeah, I recharge mine on the window ledge. The sun comes round in the afternoon and it's there all afternoon until sunset. So it gets charged nicely on the.
Very good, very good.
And sometimes I'll take it out with me and it'll get to feel a bit of earth.
Is there when somebody buys something like that, that let's say they go to like a shop and they buy one, is there a time that you think that they should not use it right away, or what I call like basically make it their own? So in other words, that it is, do you recommend that when somebody buys something, whether it's through the internet or a shop?
Yeah, so many people have handled it before then. The person who mined it, then the shipper, then the wholesaler, then the retailer, probably 20 people before then picked it up before they bought it.
Okay.
So, yeah, cleanses it. And the way that I recommend for cleansing crystal, a smaller crystal, is to get a glass bottle, put some mineral water in it, and a sprinkling of salt.
Oh, okay.
Sea salt, not rock salt.
Right, sea salt, exactly.
Yeah, and immerse your crystal in it for 24 hours.
Okay.
And then, if it's a small crystal, carry it upon your person after that for 24 hours.
Okay.
Can't do that if it's a boulder, but have it in your living space if it's too big to carry.
Right.
And keep it. So it attunes to you. It's your...
Exactly, you make it your own.
Yeah, I mean, I contest that every crystal has its own little elemental in it, its own little nature spirit. Help you. It wants to be your friend. It wants to help you. So you have to allow it to do that. And to do that, you have to cleanse all the vibrations of the myriad of other people who handled it first from it.
Okay.
And then it can work with you. It can be your friend.
And that makes perfect sense. That absolutely makes perfect sense. And you know, I totally agree with you. I know some people will say, well, that's like, you know, animus, you know, you're giving... But I totally believe that different things, especially things of this nature, they do have their own spirit, their own vibration, their own a part where if you want to work with it, make it your own, whether it's to use it for your protection or for the space you live in or for psychic, whatever, that you do have to do this type of imprint with it. So that,
yeah, for sure. It can then connect to you and be your crystal.
Yes.
And it doesn't really matter after that if a loved one or somebody else touches it. It's still your crystal. It's still attuned to you.
Mm-hmm.
If someone horribly negative touches it, then of course please cleanse it again and start all over from the start, because the crystal will feel that and you'll feel it next time you touch your crystal. But I've worked with crystals. Really.
Okay.
And that's why I did have a crystal for about 10 years, because I felt them so strongly, and they're beautiful to work with.
Now,
and each country tends to have its own particular crystals which are vibrating to the land of this country. In here in England, copper is, for me, very in tune with this particular country. England and copper seem to be intertwined.
Okay.
I have been to the States and I've felt turquoise so strongly there, the vibration. So each country will have its different crystal which harmonizes the best with the people who live there.
Absolutely. Of course, and it's because of the land where you live. It's that's totally understandable. So at this point, and if anybody ever contacted you for help, are you willing to accept somebody that contacts you, or are you strictly just writing your book now and working only locally?
If I'm able to, I will always help people.
Okay.
If at all possible.
Okay.
It's what I've always done. You know, my writing is great fun and I enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's nice that people like it. And when I first launched this book back in, when was it, November, I just did it as a Kindle book. And it hit number one worldwide for a couple of days, which was absolutely thrilling. Then I did the paper version. But, what I do is help people. So if people get in touch, yes, of course, I'll help them if I'm able to.
Okay, so what I've done is I have included your Facebook, a link for your Facebook page on the credits of the show.
Okay.
So that if anybody wants to contact you, whether it's to, you know, ask you for help or advice or follow up with you for your books, that they're going to be able to do so.
Yeah, sure. Any questions at all, please ask away, and I'll do my very best to answer.
Yes, because it sounds like you're very well, very knowledgeable in all these different areas. Very, very knowledgeable.
It's been my life's work, in a sense.
Yes.
You know, I mentioned how young I was when this all started, and, you know, I've been through many different journeys, many different experiences, hopefully many more to come. But it's what I do.
And there's no shortcut for experience. You can read a lot of books, but there's no shortcut for experience.
Yeah, and you have to make a few mistakes.
Of course, that's where that's how we learn the best. Like, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah, and if you're sensible and if you've been paying attention, then just so you don't do that one
exactly.
again.
That part about paying attention. Very important.
Yes.
Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and so that I could let my viewers, you know, listen to what you were telling about your experiences, about everything. Okay. And I'm hoping I'm going to be following to see when you put out your book, to bring you back on again so we could discuss that book, because it sounds like it's a very, very interesting book that's in the making, based on what you've told me, all the efforts you're putting into it.
It'll be a very personal book. The one that I've done is personal in the sense that everything in there applies to things which have happened to me and experiences I have had. But this is me first realizing just what there is out there, just what there is in this world that can't quite be explained by the rational way. So when it does eventually see the light of day, I'll be delighted to come and have another chat.
So what this sounds like is that you're going to be describing what you're researching, but at the same time, it's also describing your experiences, how it affected you in your life as you go into this field and your experiences.
I also want to tell a few other people's stories as well.
Yes.
So some of the other people who are involved in this, if I'm able to, I'll also get to contribute to the book. And see what they have to say about it, what it meant to them and how it changed them.
You know, people don't understand how important it is when you have someone like yourself that writes these stories, you know, based on your experience with other people, so that sometimes when people feel isolated because they've had something happen to them and they're kind of like either embarrassed or scared, and they read about someone else having a very similar experience, it makes them feel like, okay, I haven't been singled out. It's other people have had this happen to them. And that's very important, because some people do have a little bit of a hard time talking about if they've had a paranormal or supernatural experience, whether it was once or it's an ongoing thing, because they're very afraid of negative repercussions of being seen, like, you're crazy, what's wrong with you?
that's one of the, if you like, main services that I have, to let people talk. Tell me what's happened, in a completely non-judgmental way. I'm not going to judge them, because I've had experiences as well. Talking about it, that in itself, just having someone who understands, and will listen to them, then we can deal with the practical part later, you know, dealing with whatever it is, but just being able to talk about it.
Well, and you know who's especially important for? The diehard skeptics who once upon a time said, never me, or I don't believe that, that's crazy, and then they find themselves right in the thick of it, and they're like, okay, how, and then when they start reading about it, and they go, okay, you know what, maybe there's something to this, and it allows them to reach out and get some help or figure it out. But again, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it. And I will be recontacting you again, like I said, so that we could go over that new book, which I'm looking forward to reading about it.
Yeah, pleasure. Glad to spend a bit of time with you.
It has been fantastic. Thank you so much again. Take care.
Okay, take care. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, see, I found some really neat supernatural people from across the pond in the UK. What do you think about that? Huh? So anyway, guys, again, you could see this gentleman, he was having experiences as little as 2 years of age. And by the way, I've heard about this a lot, where people basically get kind of like a little bullseye on them from the negative or the dark side, whatever you want to call it, whatever. Even before they're aware that they're going in the direction of intervening or confronting or liberating people from malevolent forces, okay? Because, of course, at 2 years of age, he had no idea this was what was coming his way. And, but we've said it before, you know, on the other side, time is not measured the same way, okay? And I'm sure that that experience he had was the hope that he would be scared enough to just not ever delve into any of that, which, by the way, works a lot of times. I've spoken to people who will tell you, I had a very negative experience when I was a little child, and it was so bad that later on when I grew up, I kind of felt things, but I just like totally shied away from it because I did not, from based on that one early experience in childhood, they just never wanted to go anywhere with it. And sometimes that's, there's no more to it than just that. But other times, believe it or not, it's manipulation from the other side saying, you know what? I want to make sure that you never develop your abilities. I want to make sure you never help somebody out out of something that I'm planning to basically destroy somebody's life, because what happens to a lot of people when they have some type of spiritual turbulence or attachments or whatever you want to call it is this feeling of isolation, or that somebody can go in there and help them out, even if, like what he said, even if the situation might be of someone's own making, which means there is no supernatural agent in the background destroying your life. You're doing it all by yourself. And like he said, he was very kind when he says, I only do that with people that are prepared to hear it. Because, you know, when people do that, basically you are freeing yourself of responsibility of bringing things on yourself. And that's not cool. Because sometimes, but the flip side of that responsibility is that you realize, I do have control. To be perfectly honest with you, I would rather, if I was in that situation, to have someone like him to tell me, guess what? There is no demon. There is no discarnate spirit. It's all you. You need to mend your ways. Look at, start. I'd rather hear that and take responsibility than have somebody tell me, yeah, you have a very dark attachment or whatever that's trying to make you miserable. Because that, by the way, is a much, that's much more difficult to take care of. And he mentioned something very important. There's been situations where he has had to step back from it because it's beyond him. And he mentioned it when we're talking about generational curses, family lines, vows. People, that happens. I'm not going to say it's that common, but it does happen. Whether your ancestor did it willingly, knowingly, or unknowingly, or it was something invoked, or it could be a number of things. sometimes a curse can be broken because it's a curse or a vow. What he was talking about was an attachment of an elemental or very ancient spirit to that family, which, yeah, that in and of itself can be really, really difficult to disengage from. But it can be done. And, you know, I admire him for saying that. It's not like I am super psychic, I can handle everything and anything. No, he admitted, you know, there's going to be things that it's beyond me, and I will tell them it's beyond me, you know. So anyway, guys, I hope you like this interview from across the pond over at the UK. I hope you can find him on Facebook. It's on the credits, and follow up when he brings out that new book, which I'm sure is going to be, based on what he says, going to be based out of, I guess, the area of England, out of Manchester. So subscribe to my channel, hit the like button, please hit the like button. And that way, also, if you subscribe, you're going to get notifications of when I upload shows. Plus, and I've mentioned this before, I'm live streaming on YouTube. On Twitter and on Facebook. Okay. Just because it's easier to do so. But I am working on, uploading live feed here into YouTube. That's in the works. Plus, I am working on my new book. I'm working on a new book. You guys are going to love it. I'll tell you more about that later. But anyway, guys, it is Tuesday here for me. So I hope you have a great rest of the weekend and everything is going good for you. Be good, be safe, and take care. Thank you, guys.